Oh, yeah. I don't blame you. Yes. All right, good morning. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 9:35. The date is Wednesday, February 16th, 2016. We are meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. Title Setting Board today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State on behalf of Wayne Williams, Fred Yarger, Solicitor General, designee of Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman, and Jason Gallander, designee of Director of Office of Legal, Legislative Legal Services, Dan Carton. Today we are meeting to consider title setting for one measure and a number of rehearings. There are two titles for each measure. One is a statement and the other is a statement in the form of a question. Changes adopted by the title board to the first title in the staff draft will be considered adopted for the other title. For anyone who wishes to testify, there is a sign-up sheet on the back table. This hearing is broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website, and public restrooms are located on this floor. When the title board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, the board will follow three steps. First, board members may wish to ask questions of the proponents. This is to ensure that the board understands the proposal. Second, the board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. In particular, the board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution and Section 1-40-106.5 of Colorado Revised Statute. This is because the board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. Third, if the board determines that it has jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will use a staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. A copy of the staff draft is on the table. Generally, we will take all testimony first, then the board will discuss and vote after all testimony has been completed. A decision is reached by two of three of the board. Please take note that we are not concerned with the merits of any proposal here. We are only concerned with the setting of titles. Furthermore, we are not concerned with legal or constitutional objections to the measures, except to the extent that such objections relate to the jurisdiction of the board to set titles or to the correctness of the titles and summaries themselves. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. First item on the agenda is Initiative 2015-2016, number 92, prohibit restrictions on firearms. And if the proponents are present, if they could come up, introduce yourselves for the record.
Good morning. My name is Mike Speaker, and I'm one of the proponents for Measure 92.
Okay. My name is Monty Loftus, and I'm the other.
All right. And if you could start out today by telling us what you believe the single subject of your initiative is.
The defense of our right to keep and bear arms.
And did you want to say anything else about the single subject?
There's a number of things brought up in this proposal, but they all have to do with that single subject of protecting and defending our Second Amendment rights.
Okay. All right. Is there anybody signed up to speak on the issue of whether this is a single subject? Anyone who wants to speak? Okay. Questions by the board?
I do have a question in terms of single subject regarding Section 8. How does, in your mind, the prohibition on recognition of diplomatic immunity relate to the right to keep and bear arms?
There is a good bit of discussion about the United Nations and their small arms treaty. And I'm not well versed on the small arms treaty, but as my understanding, if that goes through, then our Second Amendment will fall under that, and we will lose our right to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, and this would prohibit Colorado from recognizing foreign attempts to override our national constitution.
Okay. 'Cause usually I understand diplomatic immunity to be simply...
I apologize.
No worries. I'm just trying to clarify.
The diplomatic immunity of somebody from wherever comes into this state and tries Is that the phrase you're talking about?
Yeah, I guess.
But.
It says Colorado shall not, I assume Colorado, no recognition whatsoever of diplomatic immunity, no matter where the claim originates. So what that doctrine usually is, of course, is that if you're a representative of, say, a foreign country, like an ambassador or something like that, that generally another country where you are can't prosecute you for things typically. And, you know, if you do something, they can kick you out, send you back to your country, and maybe they can prosecute you.
I apologize.
And I'm just having a hard time understanding how that specific provision relates to Second Amendment rights.
Okay. If you read elsewhere in the document, my intention, as hopefully described in other parts of the document, are, say we have some foreign diplomat shows up to give a speech here in Denver, and they try and disarm our people from going into that meeting because they don't want firearms in their meeting, or if they should come in and try and disarm one of a Colorado citizen, then their diplomatic immunity does not allow them to do that, and they would fall subject to this law.
Okay.
Did that address your question more accurately?
Yes, I think so. Thank
okay.
you.
In the past, we've seen measures that do essentially what you do here in Section 6, which is declare laws null and void, which in any way impair the right of the people to bear arms. And I guess what I'm having an issue with is how that is necessarily connected to the prosecution, the court process, you know, what happens to a legislator who then attempts to introduce a law which you've already declared would be null and void. The parts have to be necessarily connected in order to be a single subject and to not just be what they call folding into the coils, all these other things that
okay.
are really necessary to the other parts.
There's a number of laws on the federal statutes that if you take the Second Amendment at its, the way it's written, the wording, right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And then also the 10th Amendment gives the Colorado the right to ignore those statutes. So this undoes that. And then we had an incident here in 2013, I believe it was, where Governor Hickenlooper and some of his associates passed some anti-gun laws, magazine bans, the like. And there were five representatives recalled.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very familiar. I mean,
I'm trying to remember the exact.
We were a part of that election right. process. So, right. I mean.
They were recalled,
right.
and there was no. They lost their job, which is no different than anybody in this room. Walk into work some morning, here's your pink slip, your services are no longer required. And the elected officials seem to be able to ignore the Constitution and the idea of the Constitution with impunity. And putting this in there will give the people a means to defend their rights. So that's where I see this coming in as under the single subject of defending our Second Amendment rights.
Huh. Any other questions?
Sure.
No?
I think so.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
I do have one on your definition of firearm.
Yes, sir.
You refer, among other things, to platform mounted. It's my understanding that traditionally, I think the Second Amendment is typically applied to sort of personal arms, you know, pistols, rifles, shotguns, these kind of things. Does your definition go beyond that, or it confined?
That is my intent, yes. Because, yes.
Your intent is to go beyond it or to?
If it is available to, if it is available to the human race, then we as Coloradoans, I believe, have the right to own it. Because, for an example, a 20-millimeter cannon. It's too big to hold by hand, but it is still a cartridge-loading firearm. And if you go back to the founders and their original ideas 200-some years ago, every man from the age of 16 to 60 was considered to be in the militia, able-bodied man, that is. And the handheld rifles they kept at home, and some of them might be artillerymen and the like, they were not expected to bring their own artillery piece to the battlefield if the situation arose. But if one of them had a howitzer sitting in their backyard and decided to bring their, they could practice with it on maneuvers and drills and whatnot. And if they had an artillery piece sitting in the backyard or in the barn, so what? If they brought it to the battlefield, well, that was one less the government had to supply. And I see no reason why we should not have one. That's where the legislature would come in. Say I had a 105 howitzer sitting in my backyard under tarp. If I wanted to go out and shoot that howitzer and I had a suitable range and place to fire, as long as I'm not hurting anybody else and I have permission to be on that land and the owner knows that that's what I'm doing, I see no harm in it. Now, the legislature, it is my opinion, should, this is where they would come in. If I misfire, if the wind drifts, if my aim, I don't know what I'm doing, and I blow up somebody's house, then I would have no problem with the legislature stating the law that if I blow up somebody's house, I owe them a brand new house and everything that was in it. Or if I blow up their cows, I owe them three cows for every cow I blew up, or something of that nature. Lay the liability on the person that does the improper action, not on an inanimate object that we all know as a firearm or a gun.
On that subject, in Section 10 of the proposed initiative, it indicates that, you know, no government, and I'm paraphrasing here.
That's fine.
That no governmental agency can claim injury from a firearm, be allowed to prosecute any act having to do with a firearm, since they can't be injured. So my question is, so for example, every once in a while you'll see something like, say, a speed limit sign that, you know, someone's been joyriding and shot with a shotgun, for example. That's, you know, state property. Is there no recourse now to the state for things of that nature?
No. The intention here is that is physical damage to property owned by the state. So they could prosecute for destruction of government property. That is a physical action. Where I'm going with this is, I believe it is the Federal Firearms Act of 1934 that states if you are caught in possession of certain firearms without having gone through the procedure of the background check and the registration and so on, that you are liable or you are on the hook for up to 10 years in the federal penitentiary. Now, who is injured by, say, I had a full-grown M16. I have not threatened anybody. I have not pointed at anybody. I have not destroyed any property with it. I merely have it in the closet. Who is injured by that other than the state's pride or the Fed's pride because they made an arbitrary rule stating that that was improper to have? Now, if I take that M16 out and go, say I stand here and shoot all the windows out of that building, then by all means, I'm liable for destruction of property and possibly physical damage or physical injury if somebody is on the other side of those windows.
But under this section, you could take that gun out. You could point it at somebody in a field. You could shoot and miss. And there would be no prosecution, would there?
Yeah, that would come under felony menacing if...
But you say the only prosecution that may be permitted involving a firearm shall be in the event a person is injured physically or financially. So if that bullet misses, then they're not physically, I mean, there may be emotional injury.
Okay, I see where you're coming from, but my intent was for the statutes involving menacing and threatening to apply.
Huh. I'm done.
Anything else? Yeah, nothing. Okay.
No questions.
All right, thanks.
Is that it?
Do you want to start or I'll start?
You can start.
I'll start. Okay. I mean, I understand that you have a wish list. You know, everybody who comes to title board has a wish list of everything they would like to accomplish with one question. But the Supreme Court and I mean, case law and the statute says that we can only set a title on a single subject. And there's been pretty recent, if you at all follow kind of our title setting, we recently had some people in here on a recall title that they were trying to set. And they brought in the judicial branch with, or they brought in the executive branch with the legislative branch on the recall. And the court said you can't affect two branches at the same time. And they overturned the title board and said that was not a single subject. So they've been back a number of times trying to whittle down their question to fit within that single subject. And I see a lot of those same issues in what you've brought because, you know, and it's even sort of obvious in the way that you stated it, which is that, you know, there are these issues with people, in your opinion, abridging, you know, the rights under the law to carry these guns. And you would like to fix this issue of what happened in 2013 with the recalls. And again, I understand that there's a number of things that you would like to fix. And it's not obvious to somebody necessarily that, you know, what is a single subject and what isn't. But I think in this case where you bring in this Section 6, which says all laws are null and void, but then you bring in sections that have to do with diplomatic immunity, and then you brought in a section that has to do with what the DA's obligations are, and then you brought in a section with what the judge's obligations are, and you brought in a criminal code. You know, and I'm not saying what would or wouldn't work because that's not really my function up here, but there are too many subjects in here to get past a single subject scrutiny. And so I cannot, given where the court has landed on single subject, say that we have jurisdiction to set this title. Want to go?
Sure. Yeah, and I agree with the Deputy Secretary of State for the reason she stated. You know, also, as I read this measure, and I understand to some extent your intent, as you've expressed it, is probably somewhat narrower than how it actually reads, but we have to focus on the language of the measure and how it's actually written exclusively because that's what the state would have to try to enforce. There are things here. So, for example, you know, I'm concerned about Article 2, Section 10, which is the Colorado State Constitution's equivalent of the First Amendment here. You know, political speech is the core of that, and here you're allowing or actually requiring criminal prosecution of people just for exercising speech rights, you know, advocating for example, firearm control laws. And that's, while it may be connected to your, in a broad sense,
to the goals of your initiative, it's not necessarily and properly connected in the sense that you really, I think, need to go that far to limit, how should I put it, government interference with the right to keep and bear arms. There's also some of the provisions requiring mandatory, punishment without bail. There are constitutional provisions that generally require bail in all but certain specified cases. You're overriding those. That may be related, but again, it's another subject, another area of the Constitution that's being overridden. So for reasons like that, you know, I think you're, the language of your proposed initiative does too many different things for us to have jurisdiction to set a title.
And I agree. I think, one of the tests that we have to apply here is whether somebody looking at this would maybe agree with parts of it, but not all, and would not quite understand what they're voting for. If they didn't agree with parts of it, but maybe agreed with others, what would their vote mean? And that's one of the things we look at. I could see people agreeing with you that a broader protection for the right to bear arms is important, but at the same time not wanting to restrict things like bail or political speech and those sorts of things. So I think we are constrained to find no single subject here.
Make a motion?
Yes. I move that we find that proposed initiative 2015-16 number 92, right to keep and bear arms, has multiple subjects and that the board lacks jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So at this time, the board finds that we do not have jurisdiction to set a title. If you wish to have a rehearing, as I stated in my prior comments, you have 7 days to file that notice with Mr. Ward.
I have a couple of questions, if you don't mind.
You can try, but again, we can't tell you what it would take.
Okay.
So if that's your question, we have to look at each initiative as it comes in. And, you know, there have been some other initiatives that have been brought to the board. I don't know whether those went up on appeal or not, but there may be some case law that talks about specifically this this Second Amendment issue, because I know we dealt with it a couple of years ago in a more general sense. And so you may want to look at some of that case law, but we can't tell you if you did X, Y, and Z, you would have a
single subject. Where could I go to find this case law?
You could just search it on the Supreme Court's website. It's also in the, if you look at the statutes.
So this is the Colorado Revised Statutes.
Okay.
And the section that deals with the right of the initiative in this single subject requirement is Article 5, Section 1 of the Colorado Constitution. And there are sort of summaries of cases that follow that. And it's on all different areas, and they give the citations of those cases and brief synopses of what the court determined was a single subject and what the court determined wasn't.
Okay.
And, you know, there won't be anything probably directly on point because they're in all sorts of different areas, you know, Tabor, recall, the initiative process itself. But as you, if you look up some of those cases and read them, you start to get a ballpark idea of what you might have to do to narrow this enough for it to be a single subject. In fairness, I'll tell you, where all three of us are lawyers and the Supreme Court's direction, you know, they decide specific cases. It's challenging a lot of times even for us to know what the court's going to do in a given case. As the Deputy Secretary of State pointed out, we found a single subject for one during the last cycle, and they came back and said, no, we don't, we disagree with you, and, you know, overruled us and said we didn't have jurisdiction to set a title. So it's not a very easy subject for study, but you can get some guidance that way.
Okay, now will that case law you're talking about show up on the web? Because I went to the state's website to get some of the revised statutes, Title 1, Section 40.
I think the best way to find some of them would be to go to, the way I do it, is to go to the Colorado Secretary of State's website, and there's a few links, and there's one that'll say, I think there's first a link to elections, and then one under that to initiatives.
Okay.
And then all of them are in a database, and as you sort of click on, some of the ones have been appealed, and they're listed kind of by status. And if you click on one of the ones that's gone up to the Supreme Court, then it'll take you to a sort of special page on the court's website, which I don't think is that easy to find if you go directly there. But from there, it has a list of all of them, and you can read the opinions.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You bet.
All right, we're going to take just a quick break, and not really a break. We're just going to substitute out. I have to go downstairs for a few minutes, and so Troy Bratton is going to do the next rehearing.
Next on the agenda is 2015-16, number 75, Local Government Authority to Regulate Oil and Gas Development, and it's a rehearing. Are the proponents of number 75 present?
Thank you, Mr. Bratton. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents, Karen Dyke and Bruce Mason, who are both present and who signed their affidavits at the last hearing. So, yes, we are here.
Thank you. And the petitioners for rehearing, you announce yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. I'm Seth Belsley on behalf of the objectors, Sean Martini and Scott Prestige.
Thank you. And Mr. Belsley, did you have, we have your motion for rehearing. Did you have any additional comments or anything you want to add or summarize it? Or?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't want to take up too much of your time going over every word that we've put into the motion, but I do just want to call out a couple of things. I mean, clearly the primary purpose of this initiative is to allow state and local governments to, or local governments to regulate oil and gas development. But there are clearly other unrelated subjects that are contained in the initiative. One would be the right for the local governments to ban oil and gas development, which is clearly separate from regulating oil and gas development. Another clear, distinct purpose of the matter is to really turn on its head the preemption doctrine in the state to allow really very broad and far-reaching rights of the local governments to regulate things that are typically regulated by the state. And in that regard, a third clear purpose is to limit the state's rights to regulate matters that have traditionally been within the state's rights to regulate. So I think clearly there are, as I would count them, four primary purposes of this initiative.
Okay, and you're also challenging the text of the question as well, is that correct?
Yes, we do think that the text could be much more clear and helpful to the voters.
Okay. Questions from the board?
I don't have any.
I don't either.
Ms. Tierney, do you have any response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. As I think the board is aware, the Supreme Court took up a very similar measure in 2014, and that site is 328 P3rd 155, Colorado Supreme Court 2014, Cordero versus Leahy. And in that case, similar, almost identical arguments were raised, and the court at each turn found that the measure was a single subject and that the different prongs of the measure were implementing the main focus of the measure, which was to expand local authority over oil and gas development and allow for additional regulation. If the board wants further argument about that, I'm happy to offer it, but I don't want to unduly take up your time.
I don't have any questions.
I don't have questions either. I do have a comment or two when the time comes, but
sure. On the single subject?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe.
Sorry.
I'm ready to dispose of that objection if the other board members are.
Yes.
Okay. I move to deny the motion for rehearing to the extent it challenges the single subject determination for this measure.
Second.
It's moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. And on to the objection that the title and submission clause as drafted fails to describe important aspects of the measure. Is that what your comments are on, Jason?
Oh, yes. Sorry, I didn't know if Mr.
Would you like me to expand on it or?
Not necessary.
Okay.
I just have two technical things. One, I just thought that on line one, we don't really need the word the before local government regulation. I think that was probably a leftover from some of our rewriting. So I would move to strike that. And then one thing that was pointed out in the motion on line six, I think that after, and it went a little far than this, but I think after but preemption by the state, any local laws, I think I would also add or regulations. And those are the only two changes I would suggest.
Okay. Mr. Ward's back in the room. We had a couple suggestions, couple suggested changes to the title. Can you just repeat those again really quickly?
Sure. Please? On line one, just strike the second the before local government. And then on line six, after laws, just add or regulations.
If there is an opportunity, I would like to just make a couple points whenever.
Sure, go ahead. No, it's
okay.
Fine.
So I have some questions on your proposed revisions, too. I'm fine moving those if you want to just clean that up. I move the changes as reflected on the red line changes as reflected on the screen.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous.
Okay. Mr. Belsley, go ahead.
Thank you very much. So I know that the purpose of setting the title is to make sure that when the voters do read the ballot, they're clear on the purpose of the question and its effect. And I think there are two, without again going over the motion, I think there are two places where we really could use some clarification. One is the extent to which we are going to be delegating, really increasing the authority of local governments to regulate and limiting the authority of the state. I think right now when you read the ballot language, that does not come through to a voter. I think a voter would read it and say, potentially, sure, I agree, local governments should be able to regulate. Or it doesn't really get across. It does use the word preemption, which is, as lawyers we understand, but I'm not sure that the regular or every voter would understand that really what this does is limit the right of the state to regulate in certain important ways. Let me give you an example. I think the language of the constitutional amendment allows local governments to regulate anything that concerns oil and gas development. So, for example, the qualifications of a truck driver who drives in to pick up oil at a oil and gas development, oil and gas well, would be potentially something that concerns oil and gas development. Do we mean to allow the local authorities to set guidelines for the qualifications for truck drivers? To have separate licenses for truck drivers in certain jurisdictions. I don't think that we would want to do that, and I think that's the potential impact of the language, and it's not something that comes through in the ballot language that we are really intending to limit the right of the state to regulate certain activities. So that's one point. The second point is that there is a clear declaration in this amendment, in the initiative, that declares that oil and gas development is detrimental. I want to read it. The people of the state of Colorado find and declare that oil and gas development has detrimental impacts on public health, safety, general welfare, and the environment. And, you know, I did a little looking through the Constitution. That would be a pretty unique declaration and finding to put into our Constitution. It's not the sort of thing that's there in other sections. And I think it amounts to a finding of fact by the people of Colorado about the effects of oil and gas development. And that doesn't show up at all in the title language.
If I can interrupt for a moment.
Sure.
But it's a declaration. I mean, what effect does it have on anybody's, you know, legal rights, responsibilities, or, you know, what in the real world, what effect does that have?
Well, I think that would be, to answer the question fully would be very difficult. Because I think, you know, once as the people of Colorado have found something to be true, then it's hard to refute. So if there were a rule or a regulation later that gave authority for some regulatory body to regulate things that impact the public health, it could have no intent actually of regulating oil and gas activities, but it could give jurisdiction to regulate oil and gas activities. I think it could, you know, in certain contexts, it would become irrefutable in the state of Colorado that oil and gas development did not have a detrimental impact on the health or general welfare. I think it's a broad sweeping declaration and finding by the state, by the people of the state, and the impact is hard to know right now. But regardless, I think the point is that the people who are voting for the matter ought to know that if they vote yes, they are voting in favor of declaring that all oil and gas has a detrimental impact. And I think that's the desire of this title board is to make sure that people know what they're voting on.
Thank you.
Those are the 2 points.
I had one question about your red line. Your exhibit isn't numbered by line, but it's the clause that says prohibiting such local laws and regulations that are less protective. I'm not sure that's accurate as I read the measure, and maybe you have a different understanding of the text. Local governments are allowed to regulate. It doesn't necessarily prohibit laws. It just means that if a state law is, quote, more protective of a of the environment or health, safety, and welfare, I think the state law would control. So I'm wondering if you can explain a little bit more your suggested change there.
Yeah, and I would actually, you know, leave that to the proponents to tell us what they mean by that language. But because it is in the proposed constitutional amendment that it does say, but shall not be less protective of a community's health, safety, general welfare. So I guess in a sense it doesn't say that the local bodies cannot pass regulations. Maybe it actually does. It says you can regulate, but you can't do it in a way that's less restrictive.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how your change I thought that was fairly captured by our title, and I'm just not sure what clarity your change adds to it.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. The title that you said does say that are more restrictive of oil and gas development. So by implication, it does not mean you can do something that's less restrictive. I think the additional language adds some clarity, but it's probably not essential.
And then my other question is, you one of your primary concerns is that the title doesn't, in your view, capture the fact that this limits the state's authority.
Right.
Where do you see that being captured in your revision? Is it in the word increasing local government authority?
It's in the last part. Even as the matter is a statewide concern, even if local laws material impede a state interest in preventing the state government from impeding the efforts of local governments to prevent and mitigate impacts.
We struggled with that last time because, as you pointed out, preemption is a technical term.
Right.
Matters of statewide concern materially impede. those are all technical terms too. So yeah. I think that's something we struggled with and try to encapsulate in as simple a way possible. I just didn't know if you had another suggestion using a more common term like limit or something like that.
I think you could use limit if you wanted. Because that is the essential impact, that if the state says, for example, with the driver qualifications, that you know a driver who has a class whatever driver's license may drive this kind of truck in any part of the state, and yet a local jurisdiction says to drive this type of truck in our jurisdiction, you have to have a separate kind of license, perhaps their own entire framework and qualification process. We are limiting the right of the state to establish a consistent regulation that is intended to protect the state's interest in allowing truck drivers to drive freely from one jurisdiction to another within the state.
Thanks.
Go ahead,
please.
I don't know that I have a problem with the local government aspect, that it's increasing. I do think the state part, though, could be clarified. And I was going to suggest maybe on line 5, instead of "and exempting from preemption by the state," something along the lines of prohibiting the state from preempting local laws or regulations. I know it's still the preempting preemption term, but it seems like the verb maybe is less legalese than the noun and just less wordy overall.
And I would point out that last time I proposed something quite similar, prohibiting the state from overriding a local law or regulation, and in the course of discussion that suggestion did not prevail, so I don't know that we and necessarily need to rehash.
I should state for the record that I was not on the board during the original hearing, but I did go back and listen, and I did hear the entire proceedings.
Well, should we? I see the proponents probably have some things to say.
Thank you. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents. I just wanted to respond to a couple of the points made. I think some of the points made about the state are implementation points and points about how the law will interact with other laws, and that is not for this board to be looking at this stage. And so I think it does make clear the existing title that that the local government can authorize laws that are more restrictive of development than the state. I mean, it is pretty clear already. And I think we went back and forth at the first hearing about how to try to make this as clear for the average voter as we could make it without moving into a lot of legalese and a lot of clutter. So I just put that out there.
I had two questions, and I think one probably is more properly addressed to Jason and then one perhaps to you. And the first one is, do we have authority to change the word concerning? I thought that was sort of part of the required language that we must use in setting title.
We've done it before. Usually we only do it when it's very simple initiative, and we can just do like one clause. I don't think there's any legal requirement that we have to start it with concern.
Okay, that's
my
question.
Custom and usage, especially when we have something more complex that has a trailer.
Trailer on it.
And then I think my question for the proponents is the addition to the title declaring that oil and gas development has detrimental impacts. It strikes me that sort of the meat of this proposal, Section 3 talks about local laws mitigating local impacts. I don't think the intent of this initiative is to say, for example, mitigate economic impacts or perhaps increase economic activity in this particular area. I do think it's focused on effects to public health, safety, general welfare, and the environment. Do you think that's central to the proposal, and do you think it's important to include in the title?
I agree that that is what its focus is. My concern about including it in the title is that then you would arguably have to include what it is not. By opening that door, it seems to me you have to go all the way through that door. And I don't think you can get there because, again, it's going to be up to the local government to decide. And whether those impacts are economic or related to the health, safety, and adopted in order to protect health, safety, and welfare, but have economic impacts, positive or negative, I think, again, we're getting into the effect of the measure and its interplay with existing law, which is inappropriate for title.
I think I'll weigh in a bit on that as well. I mean, first, I think one of the things that when Mr. Domenico was representing the AG's office on the board that I think he managed to convince me of more or less over time was the idea that the single subject should be just that, a subject, and not so much go to the intent. And if necessary, that can be used more in the trailer. But I also think I don't know that I want to set a precedent for the board lengthening titles and adding language about legislative declarations. I mean, maybe there's some rare circumstance where it really has substantive effect. I don't think this is one of those circumstances. And a lot of proposed initiatives have legislative declarations. It's not been our practice, as far as I remember, to include them in titles, and I don't really want to start now.
Dan does have a way of convincing you over time. Thank you. I appreciate your comments.
I'll agree with that as well.
Any more questions or comments from the board? Any more comments from the petitioners for rehearing?
I would just point out again that if the declaration is not important, if it doesn't have substantive effect, then I don't know why we would put it in the Constitution, and I don't know why we haven't. No one else has done that in prior constitutional amendments. There are truly precatory type declarations in the Constitution, but this is a finding and a declaration of fact, and I think that is substantively different. And I would just urge you to consider that. I do think it's important if the people of the state of Colorado are going to find something to be true, that they're aware that's what they're doing when they vote for it.
I do think that this issue is captured in the current title when it talks about laws being at least as protective as health, safety, welfare, and the environment. And I think, explaining what the measure does, which is to allow local governments to prohibit, limit, or impose moratoriums on oil and gas development, explain what the measure does. So I'm not inclined to make that change. Sounds like my colleague, Mr. Gallander, is not either.
No.
So if you feel free to speak on it. But
I was just going to say, to respond to that last comment, take a look at Article 28. It has a lengthy.
Yeah, I think there are several.
Section.
Is that which is
28?
Again, I think it's precatory and purpose sort of language, but not a declaration or finding of fact.
I disagree.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate the comments from the proponents and the opponents of the measure. I'll just start off the discussion if the board members wouldn't mind. I think most of these we don't need to incorporate in the title, and that would be the declaration clause. the change that I think the movement admitted probably doesn't add much, which is the prohibiting such local laws that are less restrictive. And then this final clause, sort of adding more detail to the preemption provision. I do think it's fair to explain that this is a measure that doesn't just concern local government authority, but it does, in fact, increase local government authority to regulate oil and gas development. I do think that is the overall purpose of the measure. So I'd be open to discussing the changes reflected on Exhibit A, lines 1 and 2.
Yeah, and I think, if I remember right, our discussion last time was, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but right, did the court uphold it without the increasing last time, and is that sort of why we deferred to it?
I don't recall
either.
That specific issue coming up. The question is, in my mind, is whether this suggested change adds clarity, not whether, and I don't think, if you think it would be struck down based on that, then I think that's a significant concern.
No, that I don't.
I can just clarify for you, Mr. Gallander, that the title in Initiative 90, which, and I think it was 90, 91, 92, 93, that dealt with local control last time, or 90, 91, 92 maybe, was concerning local government regulation of oil and gas development and in connection therewith, and then had a trailing clause.
And I think part of the reason for that was, you know, what I talked about, where limiting before the comma to the subject and not so much going to the intent, and then expressing the intent to the extent necessary more in the trailer. You know, I'm not wedded to that. I don't especially oppose the increasing, but I also feel at a rehearing stage and sort of rather, I'd rather change things when there's sort of more of a compelling reason to do so than that. But I don't feel strongly about it.
Well, could I make a suggestion?
Sure.
If the increasing came after therewith, so you leave the more typical constitution concerning local government regulation, but then you get into, instead of authorizing, you get into the concept that you're actually increasing the authority of local governments?
That's actually what I was going to suggest, is maybe leave this single subject alone and changing on line 2, the authorizing to increasing. I don't know that I necessarily support that or think that's necessary, but I think where Mr. Yarger may be trying to go, maybe that's the better place to do it.
My concern right now is, if you're increasing, you're starting from a base. Do local
right.
governments right now have ability to prohibit or impose moratoriums? And if the answer is no, then I don't think that increasing is accurate if we're actually giving them new authority. And in fact, increasing might even do less of what the opponents are seeking.
I think you know, the purpose of the initiative is to transfer the ultimate right to set higher regulations, more restrictive regulations, on the local governments as opposed to the state. So I think you clearly are increasing the right of the local governments to regulate oil and gas and taking that away from the state bodies.
But to me, the authorizing grabs that.
And I think the rest of the language makes it pretty clear. I'm pretty happy with the title as is, or as we've slightly amended it.
I don't like the state part, but I already lost on that one. Like,
well, in light of
time,
the sort of pending cases before the Supreme Court currently, maybe authorizing is the right term, given that right now we don't know what the baseline necessarily might be. So I'm fine with that. I would be open to turning to the issues that Mr. Braddon raised.
You want me to recommend the language again, or?
Yeah. What was it that is this
so
in the final clause?
On line 5, yes, and yep, there it is. Thanks, Steve. Like I said, it still uses the preempting But to me, it seems less legalese than the noun preemption. Exempting from preemption, I think, is a bit wordy.
Why did we choose to not use the term overriding? Maybe the proponent can remind us.
Did you?
I thought I was sure in favor of that before.
Did you actually vote on the overriding part, or was that just kind of lost in discussion?
It may have been. I can't remember.
I think it was rejected, but...
I think it was, too, because we were concerned that it... Preemption is a very specific thing.
Right.
Overriding.
Not necessarily overriding in all cases.
Right.
And I don't necessarily oppose that language, although it strikes me that it's more of a double negative. So for me, I think the earlier language reads better, but I don't know. Prohibiting the state from preempting seems double negative-y than exempting from preemption. But I
get what you're saying. I don't think it's a double negative, but I understand what you're saying.
I will say that exempting from preemption, I think, is sort of ties your mind up a little bit. I think prohibiting the state from preempting is going to be more clear to voters.
I'm going to move that change.
Oh, I just did move that change.
Oh, you did?
I moved that we change.
Go ahead.
Please make the changes suggested by Mr. Braddon on lines 5 and 6.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous.
All right.
I think that addresses all comments unless anybody else has additional concerns about the title.
I don't. Mr. Gallander?
No. Ready for a motion?
Yes,
please.
All right. I would move that we grant the motion for rehearing only to the extent that we adopt the changes to the title as now appear on the screen for proposed initiative 2015-16, number 75.
And deny it in all
the respects. And
deny it in all the respects, excuse me.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I guess next on the agenda is proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 76, mandatory setback for oil and gas development. And again, this is a rehearing. Petitioners are present. Will you just announce yourself for the record again, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents, Karen Dyke and Bruce Mason, who are present and previously signed their affidavits.
Thank you. And
I didn't mean to interrupt.
Just really quick. Also, the petitioners for rehearing are present. Will you just announce yourself for the record one more time, please?
Hi, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Seth Belsley for the objectors, Scott Prestige and Sean Martini.
Thank you. Mr. Yarger?
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to, in case it's helpful for the record, note that there are 8 petitions for rehearing left in our meeting today, and I believe it's fair to say that those can be broken out into sets of 2, given that the language of various of these proposals is so similar. And I think what we did last time is address one of the provisions and then sort of incorporate our discussion from the prior one to speed things along. And I think it'd be helpful to do that again today.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. So are you suggesting 76 through 79 as one and then 80 through 83?
Well, I think it's actually 4 sets. So 76, 77, 78, 79, 80, and 81, and then finally 82 and 83.
Thank you. Did you want to summarize your... Oh. Okay. We're going to take a brief break.
Okay. Here's your water. You can come on back up. Right. Okay. All right. We are back on the record on 2015-2016, number 76, mandatory setback for oil and gas development. And I'm sorry, I'm sure you already introduced yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Seth Belsley on behalf of the objectors, Sean Martini and Scott Prestige.
Okay. And and at the last hearing, Ms. Titus appeared. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So I don't see her here today, but I think we could incorporate the comments from the last hearing where Ms. Titus represented for the purposes of establishing the record, and then we don't have to repeat ourselves since
okay.
I think some of these things came up last time too.
Sure.
But if you want to go ahead and just tell us about your motion for rehearing.
Thank you. And I won't go over it in too much detail, but our motion does point out that the initiative impermissibly contains multiple subjects, and also that we believe that the title and submission clause failed to describe important aspects of the measure. So on the single subject, clearly the primary purpose of the measure is to increase setbacks and set a statewide minimum setback for oil and gas development. But it also has other subjects. I would point out that it permits a ban of oil and gas effectively by allowing local jurisdictions to increase without limit setbacks. And it also requires local governments to restrict the construction of new buildings. So it really has a secondary purpose of having an anti-development effect. So clearly there are at least three setbacks, oil development bans, and anti-development more generally.
And Ms. Tierney, did you want to respond to the single subject issue?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents. I will just point out to the board that the Supreme Court in 2014 took up a number of very similar setback measures, not identical, but very similar, and found single subject in that case, and that was at 328 P3rd 136, Colorado Supreme Court 2014. Each of the subjects that Mr. Belsley points out, I believe, are they relate only to the measure and are inoperative without reference to the setback requirement, so they're not standalone provisions that have meaning without the setback requirement as the subject. So they are implementing provisions of the single subject, which is the establishment of a setback. And they directly relate to that subject and do not create a separate subject.
Any questions for either?
I don't think I have any questions. I think we did discuss the objection that these measures and all the related measures will effectively amount to a ban, and I think our position last time was that sort of goes to the effect of the measure, not what it says or reflects on its text. So I think we've already disposed of that objection.
If I might, just for clarification points purposes, the measures in 2014 also use the language at least in terms of establishing the setback, and so go to the same issue that you could have established a larger setback in those cases as well, and the Supreme Court did not find in those cases that created a separate subject.
Yeah.
All right. Ready for a motion?
Sure.
I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing to the extent it claims that the measure has multiple subjects.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. Okay, that moves us to the title. Did you want to address any language in the title?
Yes, thank you. So we have suggested some revisions to the title in Exhibit A, and I'll just call out a few of them, which we intend to to help improve the clarity of the effect of the amendment. One is that, you know, this is not just setting a statewide setback, but it is a minimum non-waivable statewide setback. So it is, in fact, increasing what the state has done. I would also, you know, point out that there is, again, a declaration in this amendment declaring that oil and gas development has a detrimental impact on public health, safety, welfare, and environment. We just discussed that with respect to the last initiative, so I won't go into much detail there. The title uses in several places a couple of terms which I don't think are going to really be very clear to a voter. One of those would be oil and gas development facility, which I think you know, a voter could see as really just oil wells. I think the language could be much more clear to make sure voters know that this is wells, you know, production and processing facilities is broader than just specifically the places where oil or gas is extracted. And then also with respect to the other areas of special concern, I know that was discussed at the original hearing, but we again would request that there be a bit more detail about what those other specified areas of special concern are. They include water and public places. Thank you.
Since I wasn't here on the last one, I think we'll go ahead and incorporate the comments and arguments in 75, since they obviously touched on the same issues. But what was the resolution on the declaration language?
Not to make a change.
Okay.
Mr. Gallander invoking the ghost of Dan Domenico convinced me that we didn't need to include it in the title.
Okay. Ghost.
Trying not to be hurt that a ghost is more persuasive.
Yeah.
Yes, but the ghost of Dan Domenico.
Yeah. It's very powerful.
I use that as shorthand to explain our prior practice as a board.
Yeah.
Say his name three times.
No, you don't. No. Then I'll be out of a job.
Okay, so were there changes made in 75 that can be incorporated in 76?
No.
No.
No. Okay.
That one's different.
Okay. All right, you want to start?
Sure.
Ms. Turnley, let me just ask you. You have Exhibit A. Why don't you respond to the changes that have been requested?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we think the title as set clearly lets the voter know what the measure is all about and that much of these additions are unnecessary. Certainly the declaration we've already talked about, the minimum non-waivable increase, I think, is unnecessary. It already advises the voter that this is establishing a statewide setback requirement. Requirement is a requirement. I think it makes it pretty clear that it's a setback requirement. I think we went round and round last time about areas of special concern, and the discussion was either it was all or nothing, kind of, that putting all of those things in there was going to be unwieldy, and that if we used the term specified areas, that the voter, if the voter was wanting to look at the measure and determine what those areas were, they would have that opportunity. I will note that in 2014, we used the term occupied structure as well, but it was not a finitely defined term. It was including homes, hospitals, and schools, but not only including homes, hospitals, and schools. So there, the notion that there could have been other structures that came within that definition. And so similarly here, sort of putting in all kinds of different additional terms, I don't think gives the reader, it makes it harder to read rather than easier to read, and sort of the information that is giving the reader is not worth the confusion that it's going to create. I did want to, you know, titles are not misleading because they do not explain every single feature of the measure. The goal of the board is to identify the central features and make the title reasonably clear and brief for voters to understand the principal features. The notion or the argument that, and I don't know if the board is wanting to hear argument about this, but the distinction between the two measures, I think the titles do make clear the differences between the measures. They are sufficiently different so that the reader would understand that they are not the same. They have different length of setbacks, and where they are talking about facilities, they talk about facilities, and where they're talking about wells, they talk about wells. And we've also made clear to the board that the proponents do not intend to circulate more than one setback measure. So in terms of misleading the voter on the ballot, that's not going to be an issue. If I can answer any other questions, I'm happy to do that.
Anyone have any questions?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
I do think we went round and round about the specified areas issue, and I think ultimately I was convinced that it would be problematic to try to define that term, given that it is a sort of an unlimited, I don't want to say unlimited, but a inclusive rather than restrictive term. The definition of facilities, I think it suffers the same issue. We can define it, but I think the better practice is to leave the term as sort of used in the proposal and not seek to add every definition to the title of the amendment. Other than that, I don't think I have any comments on the proposed changes.
No, I don't. I mean, I agree. I think we addressed a lot of these substantive issues. I have a change of my own I wanted to propose, but do you want to respond?
Well, I just wanted to point out that I think the use of the term specified implies that the areas are specified, and in fact, they're not. They can be really anything that the local jurisdiction determines should be included because of the language includes but is not limited to. So I do think, you know, it implies, and a voter would read it to say, oh, well, that's, you know, those are certain specified areas. It'll be limited. It'll be reasonable, when in fact it may be quite expansive. I do think that the addition of the water, what do we have, including certain water sources, water bodies, and public places is illustrative. So I would encourage the board to give some kind of illustration to the voter exactly how expansive the specified areas might be, and not use the word specified. Thank you.
Jason, you have any comments on that?
I'm open-minded about it. I don't know that I've decided I favor yet, but I haven't been terribly comfortable with the specified areas resolution we had last time.
I don't mean to interrupt. I wonder if we could use the language of the proposal to help clarify that, which would be something like, and other areas designated by the local government.
Can it be anything, or is it limited?
I don't think in the language of the Constitution it would be limited. It just has an including concept.
Okay.
So I I would infer that the local government could designate special areas without limit.
Okay. Is that, yeah, okay.
Madam Chair, if I might, it is correct that it lists out a number of areas that would be considered areas of special concern, but does not make that a restrictive list if the local government determined that there was another area that it wanted to designate.
And conversely, they could decide not to designate those and designate others.
Correct.
That's what I want to double check on, if I could, Ms. Turney. I mean, when it says includes, it implies to me that there's not a local opt-out for these sources. Is that correct?
You're correct, and let me make sure I'm clear. For the items that are listed, those
are mandatory.
Yes, those are areas of special concern.
And then a local government could also designate something else.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's helpful. I wonder if we say then, located at least 2,500 feet from the nearest occupied structure, comma, other specified areas, comma, and areas designated by the local government. We can tinker with that language.
That sounds about right.
I think he said designated, Stephen, instead of specified. Thank you.
Are there comments on that language?
Yeah, I would just point out again that without some illustration of what specified areas is in the language, I don't think a voter will quite capture how expansive they are. The areas of special concern includes perennial or intermittent streams, creeks, irrigation canals. I mean, I would think with that definition, that with any of these setback distances would be very hard to find an area that is not near an area of specified concern. And I think that some expansion of that concept in the ballot language would be an important flag for a voter.
Well, I think that was our challenge last time, is that we didn't want to really be importing the entire language of the proposal into the title. I'm comfortable with that because I think this reflects the breadth of the proposal.
How about something a little bit similar but a little bit differently structured, and say, from the nearest occupied structure or specified or locally designated area of special concern?
I'd be willing to consider that. I think we decided to stay away from quote special concern because I could be wrong.
Yeah, and I think I wasn't too excited to stray away from that. I mean, I don't think special, you know, it's not a catchphrase. It does imply that there is some sort of limit on it, and if we have both the specified and the local government,
I think that's the concern, is that it's not limited. Both. It's not limited. I think the purpose of the amendment, as explained by Ms. Tierney, is that any area can be designated as an area of special concern.
And if I might clarify those comments, the measure sets out what areas of special concern are, but it does use the word include. The measure does not specifically state that other areas may be designated. Now, that might be how it will be interpreted.
Well, it does say in Section 4 that a local government shall not allow the designation of a new area of special concern closer to an active oil and gas development facility than granted in Section 3. That implies certainly that there will be designations occurring, doesn't it?
Well, it implies that there might be a new playground being built, right? That would be designated.
Well, it says, or the building or designation of a new area of special concern.
So So in that case, it could be an exist, so there's an existing playground or building a new playground. What I don't want to us
but
to do
playgrounds
is,
don't need to be designated. They are automatically included within the definition of area of special concern.
But don't they need to be identified as such, right? So if you are building near a playground, the playground needs to be and is an area of special concern here, but it has to be designated as such under this provision. What I'm a little bit concerned about is going too down far down the road of how this will be interpreted by a court, which I am sure will happen.
I understand that comment. I think our goal is just to make sure that with this tricky portion of the proposal, we adequately capture. I think it's breadth. I think that's my concern.
If I could make a suggestion, as I read areas of special concern, the areas that are required to be designated as areas of special concern in the amendment, they really boil down to public spaces and sources or bodies or sources of water. So, you know, it may be that you don't have to incorporate the entire language of the amendment, but you could get to the heart of it in a more concise way that still gives voters an idea of what it is intending to do.
For my part, and I'm open to comments from the board, I'm comfortable with the language reflected on the screen because I think it, without getting too much into the weeds, adequately gives notice of all aspects of the definition and operation of area of special concern.
Can we just say, shorten up and just say other specified or locally designated areas?
I'd be fine with that change. And if we go with that change, I think it's going to have to be incorporated in the next clause, but not the final clause, because I think the final clause
is limited to that.
Yeah, is limited to occupied structures. But we didn't move on that yet, Stephen, so I didn't want to presuppose that everybody agreed on it.
We can do it together.
Can we just make the area, the nearest occupied structure, wouldn't this be or other specified or locally designated area?
Yes.
Never liked that singular plural mix. Thanks, Steve. Move to adopt that one.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And I say we should just do the same thing right there. You keep specified, so it's still specified or local, be designated. And just or before locally. And I'll move that change as well.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So I don't like the to be located language. And so I wanted to propose that we say it a little bit more a little bit less passive, maybe. And so after it says changing existing setback requirements, and then we have require any new to be located, where we have the word require, that we then substitute that with prohibit the location of a new oil and gas development facility within 2,500 feet. Because we have that to be located twice in the measure, and it's just, I mean, this is really a restriction. It's not a requirement of where new ones are going to be located. And in some ways, it goes to the argument that this could end up being a prohibition. And so I think it's a little bit more clear that to say changing existing setback requirements to require any new oil and gas, or to prohibit the location of a new oil and gas development facility within 2,500 feet. And then that would be repeated again down toward the last line.
Should it be within 2,500 feet of the nearest?
Well, it's still from. I mean, I guess we could use of, but I don't know. What do you all think?
I mean, I might say to prohibit any new oil and gas development facility from being located within 2,500 feet.
That's fine, too. I'll let the two of you comment on it since it's not your language, but.
No, I support the language. I think it's clear.
Okay. I like the other language better, but I guess what I'd say you're missing here is that the setback can be greater.
Right, which is addressed, oh. I think, in the final clause.
Yeah. Which is if the local government acts.
Yeah. It might help. I don't know if it's duplicative of the lead-in, but it might help to distinguish the lines 3 and 4 from lines sort of 8 and 9 if you said prohibiting new oil and gas development facility in the state from being located, because then it's clear that's across the whole state is at least 2,500, and then the local jurisdictions can require a greater setback if they want.
I'm fine with that, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like it's getting more passive from being located instead of the language of the measure, which is must be located. From being located feels like it's super passive voice instead of require to be located, which is more active.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's a prohibition. And
it's not a prohibition, though. It's a setback, right?
So, well, it's prohibiting anything from being located there.
It's establishing a setback. So you wouldn't want to have the language suggest that this is a ban.
No, it doesn't, but it does at least. I mean, that may be the effect.
But that's not for the title board, right?
No. I mean, I think that's what it does. It prohibits them from being there.
I'm just not sure that sentence now makes sense. Changing existing setback requirements to prohibit instead of, it should be, I think it's now really convoluted what that means.
Well, do we even need to reference setback again? If we said it's a state setback requirement, can we just strike changing existing setback requirements and just say prohibiting any new, and then you get your activeness more or less, and you get rid of words.
From being located.
To me, that is pretty clear. I think a voter reads it and says, I'm not sure exactly what the setback is, but I do understand I can't build it within, I can't have this located within this distance. It reads pretty clear to me.
Anyone?
I mean, I'm just suggesting something that I thought added some clarity. You know, it's obviously not coming from any side, so I'm not totally married to it. I just think that when we use that kind of to be this, and it just gets kind of convoluted and.
Could I, maybe the title that we set back in 2014 could be helpful, where we said, concerning a statewide setback requirement for new oil and gas wells. So here we would say, we could say for new oil and gas development facilities, and in connection therewith, requiring any new oil and gas well, this was last time, to be located at least 1,500 feet from the nearest occupied structure.
Yeah, I think that tracks what we said there in the original title we set last time, 2 weeks ago, or whatever it was. We can't say any new oil and gas development facility because this concerns setback requirements for new ones and a setback requirement for buildings that may be built near
correct,
it. So that's why we didn't use new.
That's right.
I would just suggest striking changing existing setback requirements and then saying requiring any new oil and gas development facility and then
in the state
rejecting the remaining changes.
To be located. We would support that change.
I would just point out that there is a statewide setback requirement today. And the point of this measure really is to override that and prohibit these new oil and gas developments within these new setback requirements. So I think however the language comes out, that does need to be clear that this is a change from existing rules.
Well, maybe we should just go back to the way it was.
I was just going to say.
That's fine.
I think so.
Yeah.
No, because it also, the last clause gets messed up with the other changes.
Any other comments or concerns?
None from the proponents.
So this is just right back to what we had set, right?
No, there's the change to the locally designated area.
Yeah.
Okay.
So right now it reads, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a statewide setback requirement for oil and gas development facilities, and in connection therewith, changing existing setback requirements to require any new oil and gas development facility to be located at least 2,500 feet from the nearest occupied structure or other specified or locally designated area, requiring a local government to prohibit any new occupied structure or other specified or locally designated area from being built or designated less than 2,500 feet from the nearest active oil and gas development facility, and authorizing the state or a local government to require new oil and gas development facilities to be located more than 2,500 feet from the nearest occupied structure.
I just have one. I think we added in the clause after the in connection therewith, any new oil and gas development facility in the state. And I think that was a positive change, actually, because it distinguished between the sort of statewide setback and then the potentially more restrictive local.
So on line three. Yeah, on line three, it would say any gas development facility in the state.
And I move that change.
I'm second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right.
Could I make just one suggestion?
Sure.
We did in our motion suggest that we include language that's the minimum non-waivable increase. And I'm not wedded to that language, but I think when you read the proposed initiative, it doesn't reflect that the change is, in fact, an increase in the setback from what exists today. Someone could read it and say, well, changing the existing setback could be a decrease, could be more permissive. And I think it's important for voters to know that it actually is an increase in the setback.
If we do that, the only suggestion I'd say is that after in connection therewith stating increasing existing setback requirements.
That actually would be my suggestion as well. I think it leaves with most of the language you have, but just changing to increasing.
I disagree with that change, and I think I raised this last time, and that's that you don't know what the setback might be. And so I don't think, I mean, changing is fine, but you don't know if it's going to be increasing or decreasing. And so locking that in, I think, is...
Why don't we know?
Well, because what if the commission changes the setback and makes it bigger?
Well, I suppose if it makes it 2,500 feet, changing is not accurate either, right?
Possibly, but increasing seems to me to be... setting into the title a...
Well, what is it now?
It's lower.
Right, I mean...
Right now it's 1,000 and... You know, I don't know that you need a whole lot of specificity in the title, but I do think it is potentially misleading to voters to not alert them that they would be, in fact, increasing.
I think part of why we had changing in the existing, is it only from the occupied buildings and not from these other areas?
Correct. Well, because there
current setback in regulations or... It's in regulation.
There isn't.
I think that's accurate, Jason. I think that might. I don't know if we specifically addressed it, but that would be a concern for me because it's.
We're not increasing.
It's not just increasing. It's altering how the setbacks in fact work.
Right.
So I think, to be accurate and fair to the proposal, we'd have to leave it as is.
And, you know, not to rehash, but that may be just the challenge with trying to use the existing setback requirements language as opposed to just saying what it does, which is...
Well, what if we just say changing setback requirements and just deleting existing?
That's fine.
I mean, changing implies there's something that exists.
Right.
So maybe that's just superfluous language.
Yeah.
What if you said setting a minimum? Instead of changing, setting a minimum non-waivable setback requirement.
Well, I think
I don't think minimum non-waivable is something that I would endorse, given that that's sort of inherent in the idea of require.
And it sounds like there might not be any. And I don't think you want that. I think that is actually pretty misleading, because then people think, oh, there is no setback requirement right now, I'm going to vote for this, instead of...
Can I just ask, where did the setback requirement language even come from? Because the language in the proposed amendment just says, you know, requiring...
Well, the title of the measure is mandatory setback from oil and gas development.
Yeah, and then the language, you know...
And we do need to use... we endeavor on the board to try to find some language that encapsulates the measure without using eight words where one will do. And I think our decision was that setback was better than buffer, or setback and buffer, and those other things.
Have we moved the existing yet change yet? If not, I move that change. The striking of existing.
Did the previous last year's proposal include the word existing? Sorry to.
No.
Either on this word.
It did not.
Okay, I second Jason's motion.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
I'm awfully ready to be done. Are we?
Really?
Are the rest of us in that same situation?
Unless there are further comments from the proponents or opponents.
No.
Okay. So I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing on proposed initiative 2015-16 number 76, except to the extent that we've modified the title we set last time.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That takes us to 77. And why don't we start just by having Ms. Tierney introduce yourself and tell us whether your proponents are here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents for Initiative 77. And the proponents, Karen Dyke and Bruce Mason, are present and have previously signed their affidavits.
All right. And we have a motion for rehearing. If you could just introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Seth Belsley on behalf of the objectors, Sean Martini and Scott Prestige.
Okay. And for the record, the objectors were represented last time by Ms. Titus, and we're going to incorporate the record, since many of these comments were made last time for the purpose of this hearing. We'll incorporate the prior hearing on 77, as well as our current comments today on 75, 76, and our comments last time on 75 and 76, since they're somewhat related. Do you have anything new you want to add on 77?
No, I don't, considering that we're incorporating the prior conversation. I do not.
Ms. Tierney, anything you want to add on 77?
I do not, Madam Chair. I would just point out for the record that the only difference between 76 and 77 is the length of the setback. It's 4,000 feet instead of 2,500 feet.
Okay.
And we'll just incorporate our comments.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so first, I guess, I'll move that we deny the motion for rehearing to the extent that it alleges multiple subjects.
Second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Right. And then do we want to just make the changes from the last one?
Yeah, I suggest just accepting what's on the screen and then reading it, and making sure there are no further comments. And then having a motion.
Okay. All right. So as it reads now, It is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a statewide setback requirement for oil and gas development facilities and in connection therewith, changing setback requirements to require any new oil and gas development facility in the state to be located at least 4,000 feet from the nearest occupied structure or other specified or locally designated area, requiring a local government to prohibit any new occupied structure or other specified or locally designated area from being built or designated less than 4,000 feet from the nearest active oil and gas development facility, and authorizing the state or a local government to require new oil and gas development facilities to be located more than 4,000 feet from the nearest occupied structure. Any other comments?
No, ma'am, I don't have anything further.
Nothing from the proponents.
All right. I would move that the board grant the motion for rehearing on proposed initiative 2015-16, number 77, mandatory setback for oil and gas development, only to the extent that we've made changes to the title as they now appear on the screen, and deny the motion in all of their respects.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. That takes us to number 78. And again, Ms. Tierney, if you can let us know if your proponents have left in the last 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents for initiative number 78, Karen Dyke and Bruce Mason, who are present and have previously signed their affidavits.
Okay. All right. And we have a petition for rehearing, if you want to just.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Seth Belsley on behalf of the objectors, Sean Martini and Scott Prestige.
For the record, we're going to incorporate the comments and arguments that were presented at the prior hearing, title setting hearing, on number 75, 76, and 77, and then today's comments on 75, 76, 77.
I think we can, I suppose first there's a single subject objection.
Do you have anything new to add?
No, I don't have anything new to add.
Okay.
I move.
You have anything? Okay.
I don't mean to interrupt her.
Nothing on behalf of the proponents to add. Thank you.
I move that we deny the motion for rehearing of the extended challenges, the single subject finding of the board.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. So the wording is a little different.
If I might, members of the board, just for the record to point out the difference between this measure and the previous two measures. This measure does not contain the section 4 from the prior two measures, which is the section that prohibits the building of new structures within the setback of within the 2,500 or 4,000 feet. So this one's 2,500 feet of an oil and gas development facility.
Yeah. Do you have further comments you wish to make on this question?
No, I would just suggest that we use the same distinction in line 3, that it's a setback requirement to require any new oil and gas development facility in the state.
Okay.
So that it distinguishes that from line 5 and 6.
All right.
All
right. Oh, no. Just accept the changes and I'll read it, or do you want to move?
No, yes, do that. I move that we accept the changes as they now appear on the screen.
Sorry, do you?
Just to accept the change.
I second the motion to.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
So it now reads an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a statewide setback requirement for new oil and gas development facilities, and in connection therewith, changing setback requirements to require any new oil and gas development facility in the state to be located at least 2,500 feet from the nearest occupied structure or other specified or locally designated area, and authorizing the state or a local government to require new oil and gas development facilities to be located more than 2,500 feet from the nearest occupied structure.
All right.
Nothing further from me.
All right.
Nothing further from the proponent.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion.
Yes. I move that we deny the motion for rehearing on proposed initiative 2015-16, number 78, mandatory setback for oil and gas development, except to the extent that we have modified the language of the title. And
I second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That takes us to proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 79. And let's have Ms. Tierney back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents of proposed initiative number 79, Karen Dyke and Bruce Mason, who are both present and have previously signed their affidavits.
Okay. And on the petition for rehearing.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the board. I'm Seth Belsley on behalf of the objectors, Sean Martini and Scott Prestige.
And for the record, we will incorporate the comments made at the last title board hearing on measures 75, 76, 77, and 78, and then also the comments today on 75 through 78. Anything further, Ms. Tierney, on 79?
Also for the record, Madam Chair, the difference between 79 and 78 is just the length of the setback. It's 4,000 feet instead of 2,500 feet.
Okay. And from the petitioner, anything?
I have nothing further to add.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion on the single subject while we clean it up.
Sure. I move that we deny the motion for rehearing on proposed initiative 2015-16, number 79, to the extent that it alleges multiple subjects.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, are you guys good to continue, or you want 5 minutes, or?
Well, we have to just finish, right?
Oh, here. Right, yeah. Ready to go. All right, should I just read it, and then we'll move it?
Perfect.
Is that what we did? All right, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a statewide setback requirement for new oil and gas development facilities, and in connection therewith, changing setback requirements to require any new oil and gas development facility in the state to be located at least 4,000 feet from the nearest occupied structure or other specified or locally designated area, and authorizing the state or local government to require new oil and gas development facilities to be located more than 4,000 feet from the nearest occupied structure.
All right. I move that we grant the motion for rehearing only to the extent that we've amended the title for proposed initiative 2015-16, number 79, as was just read, and denied in all of the respects.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. You all want to take a break? Okay. Take like a 5 minute. Is that enough? Okay. 5 minute break.